Good morning. Again, it is around 5:30 a.m. Excuse me. That was a burp, and I should delete that, but I'm not going to. But it's like around 5:30 a.m., and it's Friday, and it's February, and it's the 5th of February, 2016, and I am going to be getting ready for work here in a little while because, somehow, some way, someone's got to fund this empire of the internet that we all enjoy. I'm going to talk a little bit about China. Now, before I do, I want to just add some boilerplate. Number one, I do have a background in history. It's mainly Russian history, but you really can't study Russian history without studying some Chinese history. And for those who actually understand Russian history, they know what I mean. For those who understand Chinese history, they understand what I'm talking about. For most Americans, they probably are too fucking stupid to understand what I'm talking about. I'm sorry, that's not nice. Some of you do. Some of you do. Some of you understand. Anyways, my background is Russian history. That's number one. Number two, I haven't been in an academic environment for researching history for 20 years. I only have a master's degree, and frankly, that's just like having the badge of mediocrity in the academic world. I'm not trying to be a dick, but if you have a master's degree, that basically means you just didn't really want to do it. You know what I mean? You would have gotten a PhD if you were serious, is my fucking point. So that's, number two. Okay. Number three, I don't believe that the sources of information that I have access to or that you have access to, unless you happen to be, wealthy, like really wealthy, and I think that things are different, when you're rich. I think you have access to different forms of information. Often it is the informal networks that are more powerful than the formal networks, like, the sources of information on the internet or on radio or television, can be very manipulated, and I think are manipulated. But when you're wealthy, you have informal networks. You have people you know. And I don't have people I know. I don't have anybody, who has access to anything other than the same stupid shit that I have access to. And what I'm told every day is everything's fine and the Zika virus is a disaster and China is going to take over the world and then next week China's collapsing. So sources of information for most of us are kind of shitty, especially when it comes to the mainstream media. So with all that, out in front, the disclosure part of it, the caveat emptor, I'm going to tell you what I think, what I believe. And again, I also want to add one other point before I start, and that is the whole issue of what's relevant. I know there are people who probably think that ancient Roman history is relevant to current Italian politics. I know there are people who believe that, probably believe that, maybe they do. I'm sure there are even those who delude themselves into believing that there's some rhyming you can do with the ancient Roman history to somehow link it to current, Italian politics. That's fucking crazy from my perspective. It's kind of ridiculous, but I'm sure there are people who believe that. But here's what I actually believe. I think that if you want to understand, current events, you need to understand recent history. Not ancient history, not medieval history, but pretty much the last 100 or so years. Because most of the people alive today probably couldn't give a fuck about Emperor Claudius or the fucking Sun Dynasty. I'm not trying to be a dick, but I'm sure that ordinary Chinese people probably know about as much ancient Chinese history as ordinary fucking Italians know ancient Roman history. So sorry for dispelling your illusions about all the fucking realities that are bullshit. Yes, I think ordinary Chinese people probably don't know, probably don't understand any more ancient Chinese history than ordinary Europeans understand ancient European history. The point I'm trying to make here is really quite simple. If you want to understand what's motivating people, it's not their ancient history or their medieval history. It's not some weird, Western racist idealized sense of what it means to be Chinese. The fact is, I think most Westerners have a rather racist perspective towards China. We treat China as this one country, when in fact it's many regions, and there's actually a lot of ethnic heterogeneity within China. There is a lot of ethnic, you know, variability within China. China is a multicultural society. People who think of China as one, you know, people, one culture, know nothing about China. And finally, the map of China as it is today in no way correlates to the historical map of China, because the historical map of China has shifted and changed over time, like most maps. There are very few places in the world where you would say, this represents this country for all time. Those places almost don't exist. Give it 100 years, the city's name might change. Give it 1,000 years, and that city might be pounded to dust. That's history, that's reality. So when we're asking questions about what impacts, you know, a Chinese person's thinking, let's not be stupid and talk about the history of China being either stable or unstable, because frankly, that entire discussion is fucking stupid and it's ridiculous. The really important question is that what is the recent history of China? And I mean the last, you know, 100 or 200 years. And the reality is, the last couple centuries of Chinese history don't really bode well for the future, especially the last 100 years. China spent a fair amount, really, realistically, more than half of the 20th century in chaos. Between the Civil War, between World War II, between everything that went on from the beginning of the 20th century with the Boxer Rebellion, all the way up through the end of the Cultural Revolution in the mid to late 1970s. China spent most of the 20th century with a lot of political turmoil and a lot of death. A lot of Chinese people died in the 20th century. A lot of Chinese people died in the Korean War, way more than Americans did. A lot of Chinese died during the Great Leap Forward under Mao, many more than Mao would care to admit if he were still alive. Many Chinese died and were murdered during the Cultural Revolution that started roughly in the mid-1960s and ended roughly in the mid-1970s. So when people ask themselves, what is the recent history of China politically, they need to understand something. The recent history, which means the last 100 years, has been mostly turmoil. And the Cultural Revolution that happened again in the 60s and 70s is not ancient fucking history. The younger leadership cadre, the 40-somethings and 50-something Chinese leaders today, okay, and the older leaders, they remember the Cultural Revolution either as children or as young adults. And they know exactly how thin the line is between stability and instability in China. China has experienced a tremendous amount of economic growth in recent decades. And many people have said, well, you know, past is prologue. If China has had this rocket trajectory of economic growth, ergo in the past, ergo they will continue to in the future. It's a kind of corrupted version of the normalcy bias, but it's typical. And there are a lot of people who will say, oh, China will take over the world because somebody told me on the mainstream media. Well, that's probably not true. It's probably not true that China is in any worse situation than the United States. The fact is, economically, politically, China and the United States face very similar problems for different reasons. You know, we were the other side of an incredibly dysfunctional trade relationship for the last few decades, and that trade relationship is beginning to fall apart. Don't trust me. Do your own research. Look at the Baltic Dry Index. Look at the HARPEX. Look at, you know, world trade and ask yourself a simple question. Is it growing or is it collapsing? Specifically, trade with China. So, yeah, I think that there are a lot of notions that people have that are muddled. Let me tell you where I'm coming from. About 20 years ago when I was in graduate school, I read an article by Professor Davies. It was written in 1962. The title was Toward a Theory of Revolution. And I recommend people look this article up because I believe this particular academic has come the closest to understanding why people revolt, why people, you know, reach a point where they form mobs and they start civil wars and you have insurrection. And what Davies basically said in his paper, and again, there's a lot to the paper, and people should read it, but basically, I'll summarize it for you. He said that poor societies that are historically poor, which means that they were poor in the past, they're poor in the present, and they will probably be poor or impoverished in the future relative to some other society. Poor societies that are stable, poor, are stable. They stay stable. People's expectations and their reality more or less coalesce, and they never reach a point where they say to themselves, I've been cheated somehow. I mean, people don't feel cheated in those situations because there's nothing in their past that leads them to believe that somehow things are going to be better. And Davies said that historically wealthy societies, they're not really unstable either, because historically wealthy societies have the same phenomena. They've been wealthy in the past, they're wealthy in the present, they'll probably be wealthy in the future, and as long as those things are true, they remain stable. So Davies says it really doesn't have to do with rich or poor. This whole rich-poor thing, this whole Marxist, you know, dialectic of class warfare, according to Davies, is total bullshit. The truth is that when societies experience, specifically when the society's quote-unquote middle class or political class experiences a rapid increase in standard of living, a rapid increase in, you know, earning potential and wages and salaries and wealth, and then at some point in the future experiences a setback, it's that setback, it's that cusp, it's that separation of expectations and reality on the upward path that causes revolution. So here you have China that's had tremendous economic growth for a couple of decades. And when I say tremendous, that's really not even emphasizing the point enough. You know, they quite literally went from an almost, you know, medieval economy, really, 60, 70 years ago, and in recent decades accelerated into a 20th/21st century economy. Now, sure, they got lots of empty cities that nobody lives in, and they have lots of issues with the environment. And, you know, it's nice to breathe the air, so not being able to breathe the air in a lot of places in China kind of sucks because of, you know, coal soot and stuff like that. So it's not like there aren't negative externalities, but they've had tremendous amounts of economic growth. And depending upon who you listen to, of the 1.2 or 1.5 billion Chinese, roughly 200 to 300 million of them are more or less, you know, middle class, you know, upper middle class. So there's almost an America's worth of people in China who consider themselves kind of middle class. I don't really know if that's actually true. Frankly, these types of comparisons often fail. But assume it's true. Assume that in the process of having these two or three decades of tremendous growth, you now have 200 or 300 million people in China who see themselves as middle class. Now, there are a lot of idiots in the West who'd say, well, okay, that means stability. And that's a nice idiotic belief. But according to Davies, if you look at like the French Revolution, for example, it was the progress of the middle class in France. It was the increase in wealth of the middle class in France that set themselves up for the debacle. Because ultimately, the middle class in France did really, really well. And then there were the French-English wars. And then there were the additional taxes. And then you had that period of one or two decades before the revolution, before 1789, where the French middle class had setbacks. And even though on the eve of the revolution, they were still technically better off than they were 100 years before, that's fucking irrelevant, because that's not how people think. They don't say to themselves, what the fuck, the Roman emperors. They say to themselves, what the fuck, my dad had a house and had a car and went to college, and I have an apartment and a rat and community college from Obama and no job. That's what people are saying to themselves. They're not saying, oh joy, I'm doing so well. They're saying, holy shit, compared to my parents, I'm sinking. And again, this is not a phenomenon that is only happening to China. In fact, in some sense, it's happening in the United States as well, because, you know, many people look back on the 90s and say, oh my God, the 90s were so great. There was so much economic growth. We did so well. Now, a lot of that was smoke and mirrors bullshit, a la Greenspan. But ultimately, people see the world that way. And what is kind of difficult to debate is that since the 90s, things have, you know, despite all the optimistic propaganda bullshit, things have mostly pretty much sucked. Like, if you take away all the fucking national defense, national security, fucking treat America like a prison spending money, if you take away all the cash that we spent on the national security state since 1999, America has had no economic growth. In fact, we've been shrinking. You take away the financialization economy, the bullshit home pyramid economy. You take away the lies and the deceit, and there's nothing there. So when I say what I'm saying, I'm not really criticizing China, and I'm certainly not criticizing the Chinese people. I'm actually making a point that applies in part to the United States as well. But the bottom line is this. China has great challenges. China is in a very similar situation politically to what Japan was in the 1930s. And I gotta be honest with you, that didn't turn out so well. The Japanese people in the 1930s had a choice. They could have chosen one path that would have been more or less peaceful and another path that led to war. And instead, they chose a path that led to war. And I'm afraid that the Chinese government, for the same reason that the Japanese government made that choice in the 30s, the Chinese government will make a similar choice, that given all the options on the table, if the Chinese government wants to survive, they're probably going to choose some kind of a war, you know, at some point. Hopefully they won't, but you never know. This is it, though. It isn't as simple as China will take over the world or China won't take over the world. Those statements are ridiculous. It's a lot like the 1980s, the late 80s, when people were saying Japan will take over the world. Well, that didn't happen. I don't think anybody can take over the world at this point. If you see the world the way I do, there's really not a lot to take over, and who would want that fucking job? China, like the United States, like Europe, like pretty much every corner of the planet at this point, China will be spending most of its resources over the next decade trying to keep China from falling apart. And for those of you who don't understand this, don't worry, you will see this despite all the fucking propaganda, despite all the news blackouts over the coming months and years, you're going to see what I'm talking about. And if you live in China, you're probably going to end up leaving, because if this gets as ugly as I think it could get, we're basically looking at another civil war in China, and probably within a decade. And best case scenario on the other side of this, China could be two or three countries in 10 years. Two or three countries with nuclear weapons, two or three countries that might be, you know, ruled by warlords at that point. Or I should say ex-PLA generals, but, you know, let's call things what they are. So no, it's not as simple as China will take over the world or China is doomed. The forces at work in China are at work on the whole planet. The forces of strain impacting the Chinese government are impacting every government on the planet. China, in some ways, may have arrived late to the monetary debasement party, but they look to be participating as well. And please remember that when I talk about this, I'm really talking about the government. The Chinese people, like most people, are probably decent enough people. Their government, yeah, that's a separate topic. But the people themselves are just decent enough people. Same with Americans. Decent enough people. You know, I had a fucking professor, and she believed she was a fucking genius at the University of Washington. It was spring semester, holy shit, spring semester 1990. And this was, I think, you know, my sophomore year at the University of Washington. And this particular professor, you know, was teaching modern European history, and it was an advanced course for advanced students. And she was some type of a refugee of the State Department from either Kennedy or fucking Johnson. And I remember her talking about her optimism, her progressive European Francis Fukuyama optimism, the whole endism optimism. Isn't it wonderful that the wall has fallen? Isn't it wonderful that the Cold War is over? And it was wonderful. It isn't wonderful that history has ended. And that's kind of where she and people like her fucking lost me. This whole history ended bullshit in 1990. What a fucking load of horseshit. I don't know where Francis Fukuyama is today, but if he hasn't had his ass kicked lately, I hope somebody, well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know where he is today, but hopefully he's not getting his ass kicked. But the same professor, this brilliant professor in the spring of 1990, was so proud of the fact, so very, very proud that Yugoslavia, which had chosen to separate itself from the Soviet bloc under Tito, had proven to the world that endism was true because Tito had removed ethnic hatred from Yugoslavia, and Yugoslavia was a partial member of the EU, and there were the Olympics a few years ago. So basically, here's this professor, someone who in many ways was very much kind of in the same model as, you know, Hillary Clinton or the Bushes, this kind of neocon American exceptionalist bullshit. This professor was using fucking Yugoslavia in 1990 as an example of the progressive path of liberal, you know, douchebaggery thinking, making everybody less racist, and there's no more racism in Yugoslavia or ethnic hatred because Tito destroyed it. The only problem with this fucking professor's theory is a couple years later, people were fucking smashing each other's heads with fucking wooden mallets all across goddamn Yugoslavia. And within a decade, Yugoslavia didn't exist any longer. But, you know, history had ended in 1990, of course. So that didn't happen, right? It didn't happen. So people who say to me, Dan, you know, China has got, you know, money and it could be stable and the people have been buying gold and silver, blah, blah, blah. That's really great. I buy silver, okay? I do that too. It's wonderful. But in no way does that prevent social upheaval. In fact, the reason why I do it is because I believe social upheaval is coming. With respect to China, I think I hope and pray the Chinese people, you know, do what I hope and pray the American people do, and that is defend their dignity and their own value as human beings. I don't honestly know if they're going to do it, but I hope that they do. I hope that they seize any opportunity to protect their own existence, to validate their own importance as individuals, as sovereign political individuals within Chinese society. I hope that happens. I doubt it will happen, but I hope it does. But here's what most likely will happen to China, and frankly, could very well happen in the United States as well. I think that people are going to reach a point, a breaking point, where they look around and recognize that not only are they not moving forward, but they're moving backward, and they're going to ask why. And when the question is, well, because you didn't work hard enough, when it starts to become that little game, when the Foxconn suicide nets stop working, then I think you're going to see what you see in China periodically throughout history, and you see in other places periodically throughout history, you'll see the peasants, the people, the ordinary people rise up. And I don't mean onesies and twosies, and I don't mean a bunch of fucking students in Tiananmen Square either. If you think that's what's coming, if you believe that's what's coming, you do have a rude awakening on the horizon. That's not what's coming. This isn't going to be Tiananmen Square. And for those of you who believe in Francis Fukuyama and Chinese triumphalism, exceptionalism, or U.S. triumphalism, exceptionalism, for those of you who believe in that bullshit, I feel sorry for you. You're going to figure out eventually that you're wrong. That there probably isn't a triumphal theory of history, that there probably isn't a chosen people, that a chosen people probably doesn't exist, and that whatever future China faces and the world faces, it is rife with challenges and conflict and low on understanding.